Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Binary Jazz, the show that is a podcast that is like Balderdash, except not. I'm Chris, Jazz Sequence on the internet. That is Gary, which is Binary Gary on the internet. And that's Allison, who is Allison Plus on the internet. And we are collectively Binary Jazz on the internet.
Did you say who you are on the internet?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
Yes. You were distracted.
Looking for squirrels.
Geese.
Got it. Go ahead.
Yes.
It's fine.
And Gary is a squirrel inspector. That's why he's so concerned about the squirrels behind him. And Allison is the chief ambassador, Canadian ambassador to South Guinea. Yeah, that's why she travels a lot.
Nice.
And today, and so if you're new to the show, which we hope you aren't, this is
Where
episode. Yeah, exactly. This is episode 10,010. And of course, we're calculating this in binary, so we haven't actually recorded 10,000 shows. We've just recorded 10010.
It feels like just yesterday,
shows.
Though, was 10,001, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. So the show is. Allison comes up with a topic, and we have to figure out how to talk about the topic without knowing what the topic is before Allison tells us what the topic is. And then at the end, we answer questions that have been submitted by listeners, of which we have at least one left.
Listener or question?
Both. I mean,
we always have at least one listener, Moa.
Yes.
Yeah, our first
That's
listener.
True. Listener number one.
Co-host, yeah.
Listener number one who is so vital to the show that she became part of a show.
Is there like a membership card that comes with being listener number one? Like, do you have like a...
Oh, yeah, that'll be my next side project. A DIY craft project for the afternoon is president of the Binary Jazz fan club. I'm a sucker for an ID card that has a sepia photo. We all know that.
I mean, I get it.
Anything that I can dress up as Carmen San Diego, I'm in.
Aren't we all?
my driver's license.
Are you wearing a hat? Are you wearing the hat?
No.
Oh.
They don't let you wear hats in your photo, do they?
Well, I don't. I mean, but in Canada, it seems like they would be much more permissive to that kind of thing.
Mardi Gras masks and who knows, just whatever
yeah.
you look like when you're driving.
It's just anarchy in Canada. I mean, you know.
I don't think it's anarchy at all in Canada. I mean, I think the craziest thing that happened in Canada has to be the maple syrup heist from, That's which true. Is a fantastic story. There was like an episode of Netflix of some series about bad business decisions or something, but it was really enthralling. So I feel like that's like the pinnacle of crime in Canada. And that being the case, IDs don't need to be as strict as they are in the U.S. I mean, in the U.S., for crying out loud, you have to use your ID to vote, right? So, I mean...
I had to use my ID to vote as well. I voted a few weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. We had an election here in Ontario that...
Oh, yeah.
...did not turn out so well, depending on who you are. But for me, it did not turn out as I would like to.
I think it's good for the cocaine dealers.
Yeah, I mean, like, depending on where you fall in the Ford family, but I was not pleased.
Here's an ignorant question. Is that Ford related to the Fords of Detroit?
I don't believe so.
It seems like proximity. I mean,
they're probably all related in some deep, deep-rooted capacity, but I don't think there's immediate relation. I feel like they would have tried to capitalize on that, and that would definitely be at the forefront of their publicity if that was
okay. Yeah, that's probably a valid point.
I feel like they capitalize on so smaller things, so I feel like they would have leapt on that from the get-go.
Sure.
Well, the Ford family. Anyway, on to better and happier topics. the topic for this week, which you might know, it occurred to me this morning, but we'll see. We'll see how long you can talk about it, even if you do know it, is Dyson Sphere.
Dyson Sphere.
Mm-hmm. Two words, Dyson and Sphere.
Is that the vacuum cleaner?
No. Obviously it's a sphere of hot dog meat.
No, the Dyson Sphere, it's the one that has, it's the purple one with the ball in the middle, and it sucks up animal hair. That's the Dyson Sphere.
The purple one with the ball in the middle?
You know, the Dyson vacuum cleaners, yeah.
It sounds like a hamster, like a, one of the
No, it's like a big, it's yeah, and the filter, the way it works is, it creates the vortexes, I don't know. And conceptually, like, it uses the same concept as a tornado. So you have a bunch of vortexes spinning on vortexes that create major suction, and the, I don't know what roll the ball plays, or the sphere in this case.
You know, yesterday we were talking about blenders. That's how my blender works, by creating a vortex.
Dyson doesn't make blenders, do they?
No. But I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it back into, pulling it back into blenders because, you know, we're blender people. Yeah. As pointed out by the last episode.
Yeah, 2/3 of us are blender people.
Yeah, right.
We'll get you. Trust me, once you invest in a good blender, you don't stop blending.
It's funny because I'm partially the reason why I am a blender person and have a Blendtec specifically is because the dude from the Will It Blend videos, and if you don't know what Will It Blend is, then you should go look
stop
at
listening.
Stop listening. Go watch yeah. now.
People blend dangerous things. Yeah.
He came to our WordCamp many years ago because Blendtec's website was built on WordPress, and Velda, who now works for Automatic, was the person is in our community and was the person who built the site. So she brought him in, and he told the story of Blendtec and how they became a thing, and how Will It Blend became a thing. And really, it was like they have this amazing, very technically superior product that, because they're all scientists and engineers, was not selling at all. And as a sort of last ditch effort, some dude is like, well, why don't you just get a blender and just throw some crap in it, and we'll put it on YouTube, and maybe a few people will see it, and maybe we'll sell some units. And that became the start of the viral videos of Will It Blend, and that is what made their business successful. Yeah, and that's why
and
I have
worked.
A blend.
It worked because you also bought a blender.
Yes, it did, and I did. And so what's unique about their design is that they don't focus many blenders, most blenders even, focus on having really sharp blades so it can slice through whatever it's blending. Blendtec doesn't worry about that. Their blades are very, very dull, and they focus on making the blades go really, really fast so that it just tears it apart. And then the shape of the jar creates a vortex to suck the stuff down into the middle to make it hit the blades. And I know that you wanted to hear that because you were talking about vortices in your Dyson sphere vacuum cleaner.
But don't all blenders create a vortex?
Your body.
Yeah, but some of them don't do it very well. Some of them don't do it very well, and like one of the problems that a lot of blenders, lesser blenders have, is it'll create the vortex, but then you'll have this thing where it'll sort of suck things down, but you have this layer on top where it's not getting blended at all. And so the design of the jar is meant to reduce that, to sort of have it, because they have it.
But I feel
a square
like that's.
Jar.
Yeah, I feel like the less sharp blades and speed is a lot of marketing mumbo jumbo and not so much science. So now I'm hearing this secondhand from you, right? Because I think every blender, you know, can have dull blades and spin faster or slower. So I don't know. You as a representative of BlendTech have not sold me, Chris.
Well, I admit I'm probably not.
Though the counter is pretty cool. I do like the counter concept. I wish all my appliances had a counter.
That's true. You know?
Like, I mean, how often you open your laptop? Like, ching, you know, like it'd be nice to know. Or I don't know if it'd be nice to know. That'd be interesting to know that.
You've opened this laptop 87,000 times.
Yeah, it could be a very somber reminder.
Well, the battery monitor in battery monitor stuff in OS X is really specific about how often you've fully charged and discharged, and you know, capability. And heck, even the new iOS 12, the like how many times you pick up your phone and turn it on, like they track that. Like it's trackable in the interest of helping you use your phone less, but. I think they call it screen time. I don't know. I don't know. Otherwise, I like iOS 12 outside of that thing. I don't really know what it does. Dyson Sphere.
I actually feel like I mean, this is a phrase that I am familiar with. I just don't remember what it is. So, and I'm fighting the urge to Google it, because when I have that nagging feeling that I know what the thing is, that sounds familiar and I know what it is, but I don't know what it is, then I want to Google it. Like that feeling of like, hey, there's that actor that was in that movie and like, oh, what's their name? And I need to look it up now. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it the thing you get like see at science centers where like the like electricity comes to the edge when you put your fingers on there?
No, that's okay. Something else.
Trying to describe the thing with the like.
If you came to be educated, came to the wrong podcast.
I wanted to say Jacob's Ladder, but it's not Jacob's Ladder. It's something else.
No.
That'll be next week's topic.
Yeah, so I think that the Dyson Sphere. Well, Sphere's an easy part, isn't it, Chris? We've got that unlocked down.
And Dyson is obviously the name of the person who invented this particular sphere, yes. I still like
viewers at home, Sphere.
Viewers.
For viewers at home that are actually watching on YouTube, that is what the sphere is, yes. But
yeah.
For viewers or listeners at home that are just listening to the podcast, Gary held up a small ball.
It's a golf ball, a practice golf ball.
Why is it a practice golf ball versus a real golf ball?
Because it has holes in it, so it's flimsy plastic. You can't really.
It's a wiffle ball.
I ended up buying 50 of these silly balls on Amazon. I bought 25, and they were never delivered. So I reported like the package missing, and Amazon was like, "Well, we'll send you more." So then the next day, I got the first package that were yellow, 25 of them. And then a day later, I got my 25 blue ones. So what happens is the kids and I play with in the backyard, and often they end up on top of the porch. And then when it rains, then the rain like washes them down and out the gutters. So underneath the downspouts, after a good rain, there's like 30 or so little plastic golf balls. And then we can play again until we hit them all back on the roof. And then we have to wait for the rain. I mean, I guess I could probably like spray a hose up there, but half the fun is like, well, they're all in storage now. You know? Yeah. So
game's over until rain.
The best part is that when I got the first box, my son was sitting on the couch, and I'm like, "Oh, look at this! This is so cool!" And I walked up and accidentally like spilled 25 plastic golf balls on it. It was great. He's like, "Oh man!" And I thought that was really entertaining. So the next day, when the next box came, I'm like, "Oh look!" He went, "Oh man, not again." I love that was like a thing. I guess I got all 25. I didn't find any under furniture, but there's probably still some hanging around the house, you know. When you have 50 plastic golf balls, you don't keep inventory. You just, whatever. There's a bunch of them. A couple have been hit by the lawnmower. Several are like in the deep weeds back there that I can't get to. You know, when I find them in pieces or smashed, I throw them away. But, you know, they're just cheap, stupid toy. Yeah.
The squirrels are probably collecting them and storing them away for winter.
Boy, that picture squirrel little cheeks that with a golf ball in his cheek.
I guess you don't really your squirrels are kind of like year round. They're not really like
they probably have a Yeah, it's probably like a good week that they need to have storage of food, you know, where things aren't growing.
Maybe the golf balls won't. The golf balls won't benefit them unless they're like playing fetch with them. That's
yeah.
You need to teach your squirrels how to play fetch with some like peanut butter and some golf ball. That's the secret.
There are, I've known people in Florida that have like befriended squirrels, and when they come out in their backyard, squirrels will run to them like a pet and will climb on them and play with them and stuff. Yeah, right? I mean, that seems a little weird to me, but I mean, more than one person I know of that was like, oh yeah, when I was a kid, we would go out there and feed them, and then they would climb on us, and so they got used to when we come outside, they just come and like run up our leg waiting for a snack. I don't know if I want a squirrel running up my leg.
No. I feel like squirrels are like furry pigeons, that they are carriers of things.
Yeah. Plastic golf balls sometimes of the year.
Yeah.
I've had several Puerto Rican friends, and they're always like, what is that thing? It's a squirrel. We don't have those in Puerto Rico. So that's always fun to, like, you know, explore squirrels.
Are all your squirrels, like, gray and brown? Or do you have white?
No. I mean, I think I've seen a white one. They're mostly grayish. They're not really cute.
In Toronto, there's a few albino ones that are running around, and people always get very excited when they spot them.
I'm not going to lie. If I saw an albino squirrel in my backyard right now, I'd be totally distracted and super excited. So, I mean, I get that. I'm on board.
Yeah. I do like to picture you, like, just leaving the screen and, like,
I got to go.
Romping in the back.
You understand. I was in a company, a team chat a couple days ago, and a small gopher tortoise. I actually think I uploaded it, the gopher tortoise video. First in the backyard, and we were discussing something. I'm like, I gotta go, baby tortoise, and just disappeared for 10 minutes to go, like shoot video of this tortoise and get a photo with my kids with the tortoise. It's exciting. We haven't had baby tortoises for several years. I think I accidentally killed one a couple summers ago. They burrow, and when they burrow, they dig super deep holes. So one was burrowing next to the house underneath this very porch. And I read online that if you put a hose down the hole, the tortoise would come out because they would think it was raining and they didn't want to be down there, so they would drown. So I put a hose down the hole. So the tortoise came out, and I was kind of standing there, and the tortoise came out and saw me and was like, oh, hell no. So it stopped right at the edge. And then the burrow, I guess it's possible. So then, like, with the mud, like, it started caving in, and I turned the water off, and I'm like, oh, man, now there's, like, a tortoise buried there. I guess it's possible it dug out and just, like, rain and stuff washed it back in. But I think it's more likely that tortoise was just like, no, not going out there, and I'm just happy to, like, I don't know, die here. I don't know. It never appeared that it came out, and it was never back around that area. So I don't know if I'm going to. But it's exciting to see little ones again.
So,
tortoise watch.
So this just, the moral of the story is don't believe what you read on the internet.
I mean, so I have one of the other things I read on the internet is the best way to get rid of sand spurs. Do you guys get sand spurs? They're like little, so it's a little plant that grows up, and it has, like, on the end of it, as they dry out, these really spiky, sharp, actually it's probably one set.
Oh,
yeah. So here's a sand spur. I have one handy because I picked one off my leg this morning.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
For those of you, so it's just like a little, and they're sharp, and in certain times, certain seasons, they're just, I mean, they're all over the place. I read on the internet that the best way to get rid of them is to burn them. So I had this fantastic blowtorch attached to a propane tank when I find sand spurs, I burn them until I've burned the root. And so, I mean, I just started doing it last season, and I feel like there are less sand spurs. But we're also in the rainy season, so they don't have a chance to dry out and get hard and really spiky. So there may be sand spurs that are growing that I'm not seeing. I don't know.
How close in proximity are your neighbors to you? Like, do they see a lot of this
My neighbor,
propane and burning and washing away of tortoises?
I don't think anybody witnessed the washing away of tortoises except the children. So we definitely told them that the tortoise just was like, I'm not digging a hole here anymore. And went somewhere else. My neighbor was like, yeah, let me know if that sand spur thing works, man. I might need to borrow your torch. Absolutely. I mean, I'm talking like the full, I don't know what it weighs, but like the 15 pound, like, you know, propane tank, the big old thing. Like, I carry that out. It's got this hose on it.
The Elon Musk flamethrower.
It's bigger than that, man. It's great. And you kick the button and it sounds like a jet engine. It's pretty fantastic. I really enjoy having to get rid of sand spurs. I'd much prefer not to have sand spurs, but I was like digging them up by hand and then spraying that spot with Roundup, which didn't exactly feel great anyway, because, you know, like, well, good, let's like kill everything else on the ground too. But it would kind of keep them under control. And then I was reading like, oh, you know, lime pellets should help, but I don't know if I want to like throw more chemicals on the ground. It seems like
burning is always.
Hey, well,
can you see the bald spot back there in front of the pile of wood? Maybe not. I don't know.
We talk
so
about,
when the tree came down this.
We do talk about like lawn and turf maintenance more so than you might anticipate.
That's soccer. Yeah. That's soccer. So when the hurricane came last year and I lost a big chunk of tree, my neighbors came over and helped me saw pieces of it. And I decided I was going to burn a lot of the remnants as opposed to driving out to the street and let the city pick it up, because it takes them so long after hurricanes to like clear all the debris. So I have this patch that's about the size of a picnic table on my lawn where I burned all the stuff and all the grass underneath burned, and it's like slowly filled back in.
We have burning smoke laws that don't allow us to have an.
I mean, we probably
fire.
Do too, but it's Florida, so you know, a lot of things are flexible in Florida. especially after a hurricane, like you hear people, like you hear chainsaws and you hear generators, and I don't think anybody's going to notice like a little bit of smoke coming from my backyard as I burn tree pieces. No, it's just a thing.
What I was going to say earlier was, there's a Hayao Miyazaki movie called Nausicaä in the Valley of the Wind. And in Nausicaä, there is a toxic jungle, and the way that they prevent the toxic jungle from infecting the other plants, because it throws out spores, is to burn the spores when they see them and burn the plants so that it doesn't spread. So
it does
sound reasonable that you would burn an unwanted plant because of my knowledge of anime.
But I mean, that's like a common thing, just even for like little nuisance weeds, is to just hit it with like a small torch. Like I have like a little torch I've used on small weeds in the past, and that gets rid of them for a while.
Like kind of like a little creme brulee, like caramelizer, like that size?
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a bigger cartridge of propane, but yeah, exactly the same thing. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to use it on to brulee. Yeah.
Brulee the spurs.
So I feel like we need to know what a Dyson sphere is so we can talk unintelligently about it some more.
Intelligently. Well, it's interesting.
I think my sphere of hot dog meat.
I just don't even know how you would make, I guess because in my head it's like a basketball size. So immediately I'm like, that's a gigantic.
It's a lot of hot dog meat.
It's a lot of hot dog.
It's a Dyson sphere of hot dog. You just put that thing on the grill.
Disgusting image.
Yeah, I know. You just put that thing on the grill, you cover it up, and then you just walk away for an hour.
Yeah. Well, it would fit perfectly in one of the green egg or whatever the dome type barbecues are that people love.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too, the Weber sort of dome.
Like dribbling grill. Your like meatball up to a barbecue. Like, awesome.
You'd be the hit of any potluck with your Dyson sphere,
right? And then you could cut it into wedges.
I was like gonna say
it's basically like a watermelon. A meatball.
That's exactly right. I assume it's a watermelon, right? Like
so
like closer to the inner portion is not quite as done.
That's why you have to leave it for an hour on the grill. To make sure that the inner part is actually
all the way around.
Yep. Totally blackened.
Oh, no. Well, I'm having a vegetarian lunch too.
that was my plan.
The goal has been achieved.
Yes.
He's gonna like pull like a string and a mission accomplished banner is gonna unfurl behind him.
I don't know what kind of bun situation a Dyson sphere would.
No, you eat it like a watermelon. Like, oh, we need to know what it is. Stop.
Oh, my hot dog. Oh.
So. Because it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And because Dyson makes hot dogs.
Dyson makes everything. Ugh. Okay, so a Dyson sphere, and I think it's one of those things that's like referenced in pop culture and sci-fi, but
mm-hmm.
I think nobody like really it was in the Star Trek episode. So
in a what episode?
A Star Trek episode.
Oh.
It's a hypothetical structure that encompasses a star and then captures a percentage of its power output.
So the Next Generation?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I just watched that episode recently.
I think you did, but man. I didn't want to say that.
What a moron.
So it's basically, yeah. It's like a kind of a hypothetical that explains how once civilizations get to a certain point of advancement, if you want to call it that, how they can meet their energy requirements without just their home planet's resources.
By stealing power from a star?
Basically, yeah. By harnessing the power of like the sun or whatever.
That is
like, there's different levels as well.
Stealing is a patently incorrect term to use. The energy cast off from a star is waste material in the reactant that's happening in the star. So go ahead.
So if you travel to Galaxy Y and you would have no problem putting something around a star that would then absorb all the energy and potentially diffuse the amount of sunlight and rays and starlight that it was producing for the other planets in that galaxy, thereby...
That's absolutely not the situation, though. So if there are other species that rely on this, then clearly you can't utilize the power. But there are billions of stars that have nothing around them that matter. They're empty rocks. So in that case, yeah.
As far as you know.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I guess
there could be subterranean
reality in Star Trek, and yeah.
Could be subterranean microbial animals. There could be entire ecosystems that we are not capable of seeing and aren't capable of studying because we haven't actually set foot on any of those planets.
Now we're getting into the ethics of a hypothetical.
Yeah. So stealing isn't so harsh.
Well, and there's to tie in with the Dyson sphere, which also there's like a Dyson belt. There's like different shapes you can like hypothetically do this with.
Dyson suspenders or
Dyson bow tie.
Ooh, fancy.
There's also something called the Kardashev scale, which is how they measure a civilization's level of like tech advancement, which I thought was interesting because it's basically like, and we're obvious, like, I don't want to be like, we're not doing too well, but like, we're not like that high up on the scale, basically.
Well, and to that end though, the Prime Directive in Star Trek, right? I mean, like that certainly plays into that conversation, Chris, that like you wouldn't capture energy from a star if you would negatively impact the civilization that you were aware of, regardless of where they were in development, you know? So leave them at peace and let them do their thing. And you know, you wouldn't negatively impact them. I think the situation is different.
I feel like
if you're finally discover a star and you go, oh, well, there's like, you know, 16 meteors that pass this thing every 40 billion years. You know, the disruption level in this case is pretty much nil.
I feel like there's a lot of bureaucracy and politics that go into actual decision making like that, where like things just sort of get forgotten conveniently or left along the wayside.
Do you watch Star Trek: The Next Generation?
I'm not talking about Star Trek. Star Trek is a weird utopian society where everybody's nice to each other, except the people that we're not nice to.
But Oh,
those guys are the bad ones, and these guys are the friendly ones, and this is a cool galaxy that has creatures that we're not going to hurt. There's nothing about, like, microbial organisms that are single-celled, and there's no ethics around, like, annihilating an entire culture of bacteria on planet Xenod by... by harnessing the energy of the sun that this planet orbits.
I'm not even going to entertain this conversation because I feel like you're dancing the line between reality and Star Trek, and I squarely
and you are
I squarely standing
in the line of Star Trek and not reality.
Captain's log. Yes. So.
Oh, that's so funny.
So. Fortunately, we've reached the time of the show where we answer questions. So salty today.
If you would like us to answer one of your questions, you can ask us a question on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Nobody tweets us. Please tweet us, retweet us, or anything.
I'm very accessible, and, like, I would love people to tweet us questions. It's my water cooler, Twitter, so come on down. Say hello.
But anyway, if you're not
does anybody use Twitter for anything important? Does anybody use Twitter for anything important? So this is a great use for Twitter.
Yeah.
We can be the first important thing you do on Twitter. That was a bit presumptive, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Or if you don't do the Twitter thing, you can go to our website and fill out the form on the website, binaryjazz.us, and if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, there's a form, or if you go to the contact page, there's also a form, and you can ask a question there. Couple things.
I feel like we should start referring to the site as binaryjazz.us, not .us. I feel like we're excluding Alice in this conversation.
That's true. That is part of the reason why I chose that. Top-level domain.
Right, .us, not for the .us, .us. And you referred to it that way from the get-go. I appreciate that. You don't speak it that way. Not a criticism, just an observation, Chris.
I'm still waiting for the second thing.
The second point is our site is mobile accessible, so you can look at it on your phone, too.
That's true.
I don't know if anybody needs to say that in 2018, like our site is mobile accessible. It wasn't that long ago that our site was not mobile accessible, or really anywhere accessible, but that's also something.
I think the takeaway from this is that we're very accessible, and so is our website.
Yes, binaryjazz.us.
I'm happy to say our website's very accessible. I don't know if I'm accessible or not. Okay. I guess that's the accessor's position to determine whether I'm accessible.
Give it a try.
Yeah, maybe I'm accessible, maybe not. Only you can be the judge.
We do have a very important question that has been listener submitted that we've been sitting on for almost a month now. Amir,
my wallet.
Amir has asked, how do you display your books at home if you have books? Do you alphabetize, arrange by color, size, topic? What are your positions on the trend of storing books with their spines to the wall so that all you see are the white edges of paper? I'm dying to find out. I'm surrounded by books and have no idea where to begin.
Oh, we let Amir sit for a month with these books unorganized, potentially with the pages facing out? This is dereliction of duty. Like, how did that question sit for so long? I feel like we should have had, like, an emergency episode for that question. So, absolutely, under no circumstances should books be displayed with the pages facing out. Like, that's an accessibility faux pas right there. Like, I'm looking for a particular book. It's one of these that are facing out. Full stop at that point. Like, you can't do that. Outside of that, I feel like there's a lot of personal preference in how you sort your books. I haven't in my life alphabetized. I've also sorted by size. Our bookshelf currently is roughly by category, and then within category, it seems like closer to the easier end to get them out of with the book ends is the most recently used. So recency or category. And then recency is how it works for us.
Yeah, we kind of sort of go by size too. You get a bookshelf and like you've got
you're not gonna dress the elephant as far as the pages facing out. You're gonna be hanging on that.
I totally agree with that.
Okay.
I thought that was without question. Like, the page is facing out.
I just needed affirmation on that because, my word.
It's not a thing.
Close.
I'm going to Google that after the show and see where this is happening.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you wanted randomness in your life, I'm going to read a book. I don't know what it is. It's going to be this one. This is the book I'm reading. It is The Dictionary of 1942. Yeah, so you get a bookshelf, and you have all these different sized books. Sometimes you can't even do like an entire series without like changing the size of the shelves if you didn't get the books at the same time or in the same printing or whatever. So size is definitely important. So that's probably the first criteria, is like things that are of a similar size, and then like things that are sort of a similar ilk. But also, we generally like try to put series together and series by the same author together, sort of lump it to all the Rowling is together and all the Rangers Apprentice books are all together. And then it's like vaguely genre-based. Like, this is kind of the fantasy area, and this is kind of the science fiction-y area. And, yeah.
Let me ask one thing real quick.
That's really the only two categories, by the way. Just fantasy and science fiction, that's it.
Are all your books, like, do you have just a bookshelf, like the canonical bookshelf in your house? Or do you,
no.
Like, we have our bookshelf, and then the kids have bookshelves, and I've got another shelf I have some books on in the bedroom. Rhonda has a shelf with some books. Like, we have books in a lot of places.
We have two big, like, 8-foot IKEA bookshelves in a sort of sitting room, and then the kids each have two smaller, what are they? I want to say they're Kallax bookshelves that are about, like, I don't know, this high. About, what is that, 4 feet, 5 feet, something? Not 5 feet.
I never met you. I have no idea how tall you are, so.
He's 8'5".
Yes.
Okay, that's closer to 6 then when you put your
hand down. I'm 1.2 parbs. Yeah, they're about 4 feet, so the kids have their own bookshelves in their room, and then we have a really tall bookshelf in our room, and then we have a separate bookshelf that's the same thing the kids have that we have, like, cookbooks on.
Yeah.
And then I've got a few books, mostly graphic novels, and the stuff that Erin didn't want in the bedroom because she doesn't like it, in my office.
Since we have less than a minute left, mm-hmm. I want to explore one problem I have.
Mm-hmm.
There are occasionally books that you receive as a gift that are just not a book for you, right? I find it insanely difficult to get rid of those books, or any book really that I've acquired in some way that's just not a book that I need, you know? Not something I'll ever refer to again.
Aaron, but it's like no problem just tossing those in the give to a secondhand store pile.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you need to do with them. But gosh, even then, it's like, it's, I don't know. There's an honor in the written word, I feel, even when the words are dumb.
It could be the gift that keeps on giving. You could just give it to someone else. Just pass the buck.
I probably need to, like, mark the inside to make sure I don't get it back.
So. Or put it in one of those. I don't know if you have little libraries around where you are, but that's always fun.
If they are around, that's definitely a good thing.
Squirrel House / Little Library.
Yes.
This is it. These are just the bookshelves. There's no more.
No. I don't believe that.
It's true.
So what do you... So how does Kindle play into your life?
Pretty well.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a bunch of, like, ebooks.
Yeah. I don't have a Kindle. I have a Kobo because it's Canadian. And it works with our library, which is key, because I can't...
That's awesome.
I read too much to buy books. I would eat. I wouldn't be able to afford rent.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the forum on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.